Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another awesome show of VCR, the Vintage Cinema Repair. So thanks for tuning on in. This is, as always, Professor Klink coming at you, and we're here today with a very special guest. And CM, I'm going to just let you introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. I am CM Alexander, and I'm one of three co-hosts of the podcast Derry Public Radio, which is a bi-weekly Stephen King book club style podcast. And we do deep dives on all of King's work, including movies and miniseries. And I guess the best and simplest way to describe us is that we offer a variety of perspectives, ranging from the comfortably familiar to the frighteningly fanatic on all of King's work.
Oh my gosh. Which, CM, first off, one, voice from heaven. All right. You have been gifted with a voice from heaven. But two, please tune into their podcast, folks. It is a great resource, A, if you're a Stephen King fan, but two, if you just love good book reading and good stuff about how to just, you want a great book club, Derry Public Radio is the best. And congratulations also, CM, you guys are like the number one podcast in Luxembourg.
Yay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Luxembourg. I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Do I call you Professor Klink? Because that feels a little weird to me.
No, just call me Ian.
Okay.
It's just only because I'm a teacher. You know, I had the Professor Klink on.
I don't know why it feels dirty coming out of my mouth.
Well, it is not dirty. But I will tell you what is dirty. The movie you have chosen for this amazing episode of Vintage Cinema Repair. So I'm just gonna let you introduce the movie you're talking about today. What is it?
Awesome, thank you. So I chose a late 90s neo-noir sci-fi film that is not The Matrix, but it did come out a year before that. So if you enjoy The Matrix, I can't imagine that you would not also enjoy this. And it's the same guy who did The Crow, another amazing movie. You can't get any better than that. I chose Dark City.
Dark City. You know, when you told me about this, I literally laughed out loud. I literally lulled because nobody remembers Dark City. It fascinates me that this is a movie people have forgotten in the lexicon of history. And I, you know, if you know the history of the movie, I understand why. But yeah, this is a really interesting late 90s. I think it came out in 98, directed by, as you said, the director of The Crow, Alex Proyas. And you know, the first thing that I find fascinating, you know, he's a director of music videos before he got into doing The Crow. And you can totally tell from Dark City. You know, you can absolutely tell that this is a movie made by a videographer of that time period. I think I read somewhere that there is literally a cut every 2 seconds in this movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it shows. I mean, it's a fast movie, but you know, before we get to that, let's talk about the plot of this movie. So, what's the plot of Dark City?
Absolutely. So, okay, sorry. First, can I say it's insane to me you mentioned that people don't really know this movie or remember it because it has so many things going for it. It has an amazing cast. So, Jennifer Connelly is in it at her most
Kiefer
gorgeous.
Sutherland.
Yeah, it's Jennifer Connelly before she went Linda Hamilton T2 skinny, which only Linda can pull off Linda T2 skinny, in my opinion.
She does. There's different. There's like the Labyrinth Connelly, the Creepers Connelly.
Yeah.
Then there's kind of that weird Stealing Beauty or, you know, whatever, you know, era of Connelly, which this I think is in there.
Yeah.
And then it's like, then Beautiful Mind happened and it's like, completely different Jennifer Connelly.
We also have Rufus Sewell, who's the star. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. And as you mentioned, Kiefer Sutherland being, I feel like, not as Kiefer-y as I'm used to him being.
It's interesting his choice because of all, I don't view Kiefer Sutherland as a, what you call a character actor at all. I mean, you know, growing up, of course, I think all of us, especially as fans of Stephen King, you know, he's Ace Merrill from Stand By Me.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of years, way before he's Jack, you know, Bauer. But this is a Kiefer who's really acting. He's really coming up with this character that my favorite part about Kiefer, he has the weirdest language speech issue in this movie where everything is kind of like this and I'm talking as if I can't do and I've tried to find research why he does it in that style, but it works for his character in this as the kind of the mad scientist role of this movie. Kiefer Sutherland, later on, we're going to get to it. We're going to get to the Hurt, okay? Because I'm obsessed with The Hurt. But yeah, one thing I love about this movie is it has one of the only other major roles for Richard O'Brien from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, because he's normally more of a behind-the-scenes kind of guy, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest one of course, Shock Treatment and, you know, Rocky Horror. You know, he's mostly been a theater guy, but he's turned up here or there in certain movies. But his looks for this character in Dark City is just almost beautiful. Because he has that kind of skinny, balding face, you know, he's creepy in Rocky Horror. If you actually look at, you know, he looks like the farmer, the famous Iowa American Gothic painting. Mm-hmm. And Richard O'Brien looks like that guy. so it works for this. But yeah, it's an amazing, amazing cast. And Bruce Spence from, everybody knows from the, kids will know from the classic Nemo. You know, the voice of the shark in the Nemo movies. But, of course, I think we know him from Mad Max movies.
Yeah.
You know, Road Warrior and Mad Max, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. I want to see this challenge, Sam. What is the plot of this movie? Folks at home, sit down and good luck on this one. I want to see if she can do this.
Okay. Well, is it okay if I take a minute to warm up to just like gush
over it? Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I saw this movie as a teen, so I consider it probably very biased, a pivotal teen years film, because in part of it is what you mentioned about this unique look. It's a beautiful, romantic blend of crime, drama, sci-fi, romance. It is artistic. It's dark and moody. And when it stops, at least for me, I wanted more of it. I craved this world and these characters, which is kind of why I refer to it as a pivotal movie, because when I watched it as a teen, it opened my mind up to more critical thought, the way I feel like most horror movies do really well. I would spend hours thinking about it, wondering how, why, and what, and fantasizing about being the characters, and not just the female lead. I mean, who doesn't fantasize about being Jennifer Connelly? But all of them. You just want to experience this movie every way possible. So, I mean, I guess I'm saying it's like an okay film, you know. But it is about a guy named John Murdoch who has amnesia. So he doesn't know who he is, and neither do we as the audience, which is really cool. But the important thing about him is that everyone else is pretty sure that he is a serial killer. And so we spend this movie with John as he tries to not only figure out who he is, but clear his name, run from the police, and for a beautiful twist, he's also running from a group of people with quotes around it, known as the Strangers.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this is where Richard O'Brien is. And they're dressed, you know, the Strangers have such a unique look to them. Because they're, and why this is so interesting, this movie predates that whole Matrix thing, is they're dressed in like all leather, and they can basically manipulate the world around them. right? They can change buildings, they can change how things look, they can move things. I mean, I swear to God, if they had on glasses and, you know, suits and a tie, they would be the agents from the Matrix.
Yeah. There's a really cool, and I feel so terrible, I can't remember who this YouTuber is, but there's a comparison between this film, Dark City, and The Matrix, and you can see all of these shots. Like, they took heavily from it. You can tell that The Matrix was very much inspired by this, and a lot of the set pieces are actually the same, too. So even beyond what they did intentionally, just using those set pieces gives you that similar kind of feel. And it makes me wonder, because The
Matrix... You're lying.
No.
You are lying. They took sets from Dark City and used it in The Matrix?
Yes, I believe there's the one I remember for sure, I think, is the staircase in the hotel when he's running, or in the apartment building. There's like that really beautiful winding staircase scene, and the tile on the floor at the bottom there. I believe that is one of the sets.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. I never caught that.
Is it, so watching Dark City and The Matrix, is it like that scene in The Matrix where he sees the cat twice? Like, watching these two movies, is it like a glitch where we're seeing something repeat?
I swear to God. I mean, that's the thing, that you could actually put this in a Matrix world as mm-hmm. if it's an own, like a sub, almost a sub version of The Matrix itself. You know, Dark City could have actually been repackaged and re-released as a prequel or something to The Matrix. I mean, we'll get to that a little bit later, maybe. But it's a really unique film in the sense of, I argue that this goes in that category, and I don't know what you think, but where you have to watch it a few times to kind of get what it's all really about. You know, I think there are a couple movies like that, you know, like The Big Lebowski or... Memento or something. You don't really, you're so like, just to me, I was so blown away by the visuals of this movie the first time I saw it that I had to be like, well, what was that? No. But okay, let me pop it in again.
I totally agree, because the first time you watch it, it's pretty, it's beautiful, and you do get distracted by that. Not in a bad way, but I stopped the film realizing I don't quite know as much as I want to know what that was all about. So I've watched it a number of times, and I even watched it last night. And watching it last night, kind of thinking about what I wanted to talk about today, I watched it even more carefully and critically. And just that first scene when John wakes up in the hotel bathtub and he has no memory mm-hmm. of anything, Rufus does such an amazing job of playing a guy with amnesia without saying a word in telling us, the audience, we can tell right away he is confused and out of sorts, and also he has a really nice butt, which is not important to his acting, but it is.
You know what? It is 2020. You girls deserve some manners.
Thank
right? you. You deserve to have that. It's been all these years of us getting the goods. You need, and you know what? This is long ago. This is 98. They were reaching out to you way back when.
They were.
Give
yeah.
you what you needed. You know, the one actor I will say this though, I also love in this movie, of course, is the fucking Hurt.
Oh, that, yeah.
First off, any movie with William Hurt, take my goddamn money. All right, it's that it's that Futurama meme. You know, just shut up mm-hmm. and take my money. I don't care if it's the Hurt. You know, any movie the Hurt is in. But what's interesting about Dark City, you know, talking about the performances, I think everybody is so grandiose and everybody is so great in this movie for their roles, but the one character in the movie that's so very subdued and is very calm and quiet and is William Hurt. And so it's almost a weird, you don't expect Hurt to do that in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, I expect him to be, you know, the scene chewer, the going for broke William Hurt, you know, who just, you know, he's always on fire as an actor, even in The Big Chill or something like that, mm-hmm. he's on fire. But this one, he's just kind of like, mm-hmm, yep.
He's so understated, and everyone else, they're not overacting, but I mean, they're all chewing the scenery. So for him to come in and you expect, like, I think specifically of the confrontation with John, Emma, and the detective, and they're in the hallway, and she, you know, kind of tackles him and tells John to run. You expect kind of a blow up or a bigger reaction, and he's like, "Ugh, God, I hate when that happens," and he just goes after him.
I know, because usually the hurt would actually be in the Kiefer Sutherland role. You know, he'd be the one kind of doing that weird, over exaggerated doctor, and it would almost be Kiefer Sutherland who's more of the. If you reverse that, where Kiefer Sutherland was the cop and was a little bit more subdued, and you know, the hurt is the doctor who's just outrageous and all that stuff. But I'm sorry, like this, that's what sold me a Dark City. That's why I wanted to watch it. I heard William Hurt was in it. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
I'm all about that. And I don't know if you know this, but my favorite thing about this movie is actually it's not even the sets, because you know. And we'll talk about that. I mean, really, the sets, I mean, it's such a great production value within this movie. I mean, those sets, you know, the fact that this movie is only made for $27 million. And I know that still is a big chunk of change. But I watched this movie, and I'm sorry, I think this almost looks better than a Marvel movie. And they spend billions of dollars on their sets.
You don't have to say almost. It just does. It looks more real and intangible, and can I share? I don't usually, I do usually quote things, but I was looking up the set information because I was so interested in it on Wikipedia, and I love the way that what the designer had to say about it.
Oh, please. Yeah, I'd love to hear this.
So a guy named Patrick Tatopoulos, I'm probably butchering that, he's the one who drew the concepts for this world of Dark City. And his idea was that the movie takes place everywhere and takes place nowhere. It's built of pieces of cities, a corner from one place, a corner from a different place. So his intention was that you didn't really know where you were in the city, because part of it could look like London and another portion could look like New York. But the bottom architecture looks like a European city. So you're there, but you're disoriented. You don't know where you are. And it's like every time you travel, you're lost. That's what he had to say about it. And it's like, yes, you pulled it off perfectly.
Oh, yeah, because it's very much a noir movie. I mean, this is a detective 1940s type visual, which, I mean, is very much Blade Runner-esque, you know. And I even remember on the making of Blade Runner, you know, which again is so ironic that this predated the Matrix. You know, they call out, well, the Matrix ripped off Blade Runner, and you know that world and stuff like that being at 1940s, and it's like, well, no, actually, it's kind of like they did that with Dark City, but yeah, I mean it which actually, you know, within the story, because you know a lot of it's about these recreated memories that these strangers have. It would actually make sense that the world would not be one common thing within that story. So I actually really like when movies do that. You know, the production design is thinking way beyond just surface value of what looks pretty and what we're going to present to the audience. It's actually fitting with the story. You know, these structures are, you know, somebody has a memory from 1940s London, so that building's going to look like that. But then somebody has a 1970s car, and it's purposely ambiguous. Absolutely, yeah.
And the strangers, we come to find out they don't understand humanity. So how they kind of piece this together is really unique.
Are they alone? In 2020, CM, are they alone?
Oh, I have some notes about that too.
Okay. You know, what I always loved about this too, for me, and what I know more of Dark City that I as a fandom than I've done the actual movie, the soundtrack. I love this soundtrack by Trevor Jones, who, you know, if any of you, he's not really up there. He's not like a Jerry Goldsmith. He's not a John Williams. Like, he's well known. But he has done some great stuff, from Excalibur and a couple other movies. This soundtrack, I mean, is a mix of science fiction and an action movie, which, I mean, Dark City isn't really an action movie per se. I think that is where it does very much veer away from like Matrix in its similarities, but it adds in elements of jazz, which is so neat for a science fiction movie to have jazz elements in the score. I don't know. Do you ever just listen to the soundtrack? Do you have it?
I don't have it, but I'm very aware of soundtracks because I do some music too, and I'm very in tune with sound and how everything kind of comes together and supports other pieces. So if a movie soundtrack or score, you know, just any of the sound bed stuff is not supportive and is not cohesive, it really stands out to me. And I've been known to say this movie would be 1,000 times better if it had a good soundtrack, but this is pulling me right out of it.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you have to have the right music score. If you don't, I do stand by, a director should think about that way in the script stage. You know, I like directors who will actually write in their script notes what kind of song should be playing in this because, you know, the song is going to make up what the attitude is. It's going to change how the scene is. I think I'm trying to think of what the movie is off the top of my head, I think it was Blade Runner, actually. You know, the great composer Vangelis was making the music as, you know, based on not the movie, but he made it based off the story and the script. Mm-hmm. And so he would send his recordings to Warner Brothers for them to play it while the scenes are going on. And I just think that's helpful as some, you know, filmmaker myself, when the actors can hear it, when they can know the mood you're actually going to set the tone to, that makes a difference. You know, I hate nothing more than when, you know, it's a party scene in a movie and, you know, all the extras are just kind of sitting there bopping their shoulders and, you know, they have no fucking clue what that song is. Oh, not at all. And, you know, they're screaming like, hey, what's going on? Hey, yeah. You know, and of course, you know, then a director, you know, surprises them and puts in like a slow song. And so they're bopping to a slow song. That's the worst. Or I also love it. There's a great scene from another Hurt movie, like I said, The Big Chill, where Kevin Kline is like bopping his hands to the song and on the radio, and he's like, "Oh, it's a great song." And he cranks up. He had no clue what the song was, so he's just like beat bopping with his hands, and it ends up being, you know, "Bad Moon Rising" by Creedence, and so his drumming doesn't match at all. to the scene itself. So I think a director should know. And I Trevor Jones, I mean, it just, like I said, if you can get the soundtrack, for those of you listening, it's up there in one of the great sci-fi scores, I think. I'm not saying it's the best, but it's certainly in the top 20, I think.
Everything about this film is, I would not change top to bottom. I think it's just perfect, honestly.
Including Shull's mullet.
You know what? That I mullet. Said everything. I got to stick with it.
You're going to stick with a mullet. You're going to stick with a permed mullet.
I have to.
Ladies and gentlemen, there it is.
Oh, jeez. That
hurts. Everybody, every hero should have a permed mullet in a movie.
Yep. Yep. Got to double down. I love mullets. Give everybody a mullet.
Okay, I will say this. The best mullet in any movie ever, besides Joe Dirtè, is Jean-Claude Van Damme in Hard Target. The wet Cajun mullet is the shit. It is the shit.
It's bold, and he does it.
Yeah, he does. He pulls it off. I don't care who you are. When he jumps over that arrow... And that mullet is like 2 seconds behind his mullet, you know, or that action of the scene. Oh, it's just, that's robbed of an Oscar.
So thank you for trying to make me seem more normal.
I do. I totally get it. You know, the interesting part about Dark City that I also, you know, in just kind of doing some research and looking, you know, what's so interesting is if they had maybe just waited a year for this movie to come out, because the problem with Dark City, like other movies in 98, is it was in the shadow of a big giant fucking boat, which was Titanic.
Yeah.
You know, it was. It just, it got lost. You know, and, you know, at the very end, you know, this movie, you know, on a $27 million budget only made $14 million. And I would argue, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but I would argue it's not because of the movie. It's not because it's a bad movie. I just think it's just audiences were going to see Titanic and just didn't see this movie. What do you think about that?
I completely agree with that. I think it's a combination of that. And then you have not too long after that, The Matrix being released. And like, I love The Matrix. This is not a criticism of it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think part of the problem is that The Matrix, as wild and out there and unique as it is, as it was when it came out, it really captured sci-fi fans, but also sort of that general audience. And Dark City didn't quite do that. And I feel like, and I'm curious what you think about this, Dark City is not as, I'm not going to have the right words for this, but flashy, action-y as The Matrix. Not
yeah.
that The Matrix mm-hmm. is like super action-y, but it's more of a critical thought film without that buffer of action or whatever that is that most movies have for just the casual viewer, the person who wants to eat popcorn and watch something pretty without having to think too much about it, which is very snotty sounding, but hopefully you know what I mean. It's just missing
oh, yeah.
that piece that makes it more accessible, which is what makes me love movies like that even more.
I want to take karate. I don't know about you. I don't know if you've ever taken karate. Every 5 minutes of this show, I was like, I want to take karate.
I'm the type of guy, I get my hopes up too high for everything. You know, I get too excited for these things, and, you know, Cobra Kai came out, and I'm like, God damn it, they're doing it to me again, I'm too excited for this. It's probably not gonna be anywhere near as good as I want it to be. And it was so much better. I had expectations that were way too high, and it passed every one that I had.
Man can't stand, he can't fight.
It's making me watch the first movie, the second movie. It's making me watch the movies again.
Yeah, I love the Karate Kid movies so much. The good guys and the bad guys, and Cobra Kai, of course. It's blew my mind. Way better than it has any right to be.
A man can't breathe. He can't fight.
Well, that first Karate Kid movie,
yeah,
it shaped the whole way that you even thought about, like, the sort of bully-victim dynamic, the mentor-mentee dynamic.
A man can't see. He can't fight.
Karate was this mystical thing back then, and the way this movie
yeah.
handles introducing it, and then that becomes a theme that never leaves. It's throughout the whole franchise. I think that's something that makes this have a lot more emotional punch watching it older.
Yeah, these movies, they're every bit as good to me now as they were as a kid, and even though I know every fucking line to all three of the original movies and half the series by now, it's still, you know, this shit can make me Cobra cry, man.
Yeah. This franchise, the way it connected its movies, was one of the things that always struck me as a genius move.
I think it was probably worth it that we did not get more Karate Kid movies for all this time, because when it came back the right way. This was worth the wait.
We'll call this the beginning, man. This is how it starts. The beginning of Hollow Nine Dojo, or Dojo 9.
Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also, like, no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
I'll word it even better. If Dark City is the Jack Daniels, then The Matrix is the watered-down, iced-on-the-rocks version of the other whiskey, that other brand that you buy that's so cheap, and you don't even know it's like Cousins whiskey. And it does the job, you know, but you can drink it easier
mm-hmm.
than Dark City. Dark City is definitely the intellectual version of The Matrix. 100%. I agree with you on that. Because I think it is. It's because it is not there is not a lot of action in it. And you know what? I guess I can also understand why Alex Proyas. I guess I can understand with the tragedy that, you know, unfortunately shadows this movie kind of The Crow.
Right.
With the tragedy of Brendan Lee, because he wanted Brendan Lee to be on this movie. He thought of this movie while he was actually making The Matrix, and him and Brendan Lee would kind of talk about what they wanted to do next, and Brendan Lee really apparently liked this idea of Dark City. So instead of, you know, a mulleted Shul, you might actually have had Brendan Lee as kind of the main guy. And I actually think that would have really worked.
Ian, I didn't know this. And you just crushed my heart. And can we take like a 5-minute pause so I can sob quietly?
Oh, no.
That would have been so, I can't even think about the things that Brendan Lee would have or could have done had he not died. Yeah. And to put him in one of my favorite movies, another one of my favorite movies, because The Crow is right up there too. That's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's so true. And so, you know, but because of that tragedy, I can understand why Alex Proyas would have wanted to maybe do a movie that, you know, doesn't really have a lot of violence, doesn't have a lot of guns. The Hurt has some guns, but it's not like he really fires it a whole lot. I totally get that this is not an action movie.
Yeah,
you know, it's straight science fiction. It really is science fiction. You know, this is not the Star Wars kind of science fiction or you know, Space Hunter or some of those other, you know, great your Mad Max movies. You know, where you can just sit back and just not even think. No, as I said, you have to pop in Dark City. I think you have to pop it in a couple of times to really kind of get it, to kind of understand, to kind of see all the little things you missed that first time. Kind of seeing it, but no, I really do. I do think because this movie was just under that shadow of so many other things that I kind of understand why it might have disappeared a little bit. But obviously the main reason it kind of disappeared, it didn't make that much money, you know, and if a movie doesn't make money, let's be honest, it's not going to warrant a follow-up. It's not going to warrant a sequel. And I also think because The Matrix came out a year later and showed how to do an idea like Dark City that audiences wanted more, I think there was just no chance.
Yeah.
But as the greatness of this podcast, we're going to rectify that. Because this is the Vintage Cinema Repair. And we are here to find out if there was a sequel to Dark City, where would it go? And CM told me she has 3 pages of notes on this subject matter. So I'm just going to kind of sit back, eat some popcorn, and just listen. So where would you have taken this, CM?
Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, I'm so nervous because this is like, I want this to be really good.
I it's going to be good. If you love this movie, it's going to be good. So.
All right. Sci-fi and horror are at war in my heart. I love them both so much. So I would definitely keep that blend, keep the feel in the sequel of the original and the detective noir stuff too. I can't get enough of that. We don't have enough of that. We need so much more. That and werewolf movies. So I'd keep all of that.
Teen Wolf 3, Teenage Wasteland.
So the look and the feel of my sequel would definitely honor the original. And I think what would happen would be that John would bring a few, you know, very select others into his confidence and help them understand what's really happening, that they are on. Is this supposed to be spoiler free or can I go more into
plot? Spoiler away. Okay. If you haven't watched, here's the thing. Stop the podcast now. If you haven't watched Dark City, watch the movie. We'll give you 1 second. Okay, there we go. All right,
awesome,
so go ahead.
Perfect. Okay, so he'd let them know what's really going on, that they are on this spaceship, basically. They're in space. This is an experiment. these aliens have been keeping them here for who knows how long and altering their lives by implanting false memories. And they've lived all kinds of different lives.
Which I did not see coming. I'm going to be honest. I didn't see it. I thought this is a different world. This is the, you know, and then all of a sudden, oh, okay.
Yeah, I usually spoil movies for myself on accident because I'm always thinking about what might be happening. And not that I'm like a great movie watcher, but I'm usually pretty close or right. Didn't get this at all, and I love that so much.
CM turns to the last page of a Stephen King book to see what... No, just...
Oh my gosh, no, I would die. That'd be horrible. So he would keep the rest of the small society in the dark just to keep them from panic. And this group of individuals, they might agree that they need to find Earth, if possible. Although, in my heart, can I swear?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Please do.
In my heart, I want them to say fuck Earth and go on to explore the universe because they are in space. Like, we have not achieved that like this. That is an amazing opportunity. And who knows what quadrant they're in? How far to Earth? Maybe their grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren will be the ones to finally return home. Okay, so anyway, as they make this journey, they eventually run into another city, another spaceship of this experiment. It has a different look and feel, but the same basic concept. The strangers are experimenting on the humans to try to save their race, which is what we find out happens in the movie. So they're still the bad guys, but it's up to our original Dark City protagonists to keep their ship safe and also help the aliens realize what Mr. Hand came to understand at the end of the first movie, because they were looking into, they were looking to the mind to understand humanity. And of course, we know it's not that simple. You know, they think that it is our individuality that keeps our species going because our species is dying out. But it's not our individuality. It's actually our bonds and our togetherness. So they have to come together with this other city and partner up. And through their newfound bond, they finally understand humanity. And I don't want to follow all of this idea up with something really unoriginal, but I guess I'm basically making the Dark City sequel the prequel to the start of the Star Trek Federation, because this is First Contact, but in like a neo-noir way. So I'm going to...
Interesting.
Yeah. And I feel
Which honestly, I think Star Trek Nemesis stole the look of the others from this movie. If you look at Tom Hardy's character in that movie, it absolutely, I mean, you should just cast Richard O'Brien. I mean,
yeah.
If you really think about it. That's interesting. So would you call it Dark City Part 2?
Oh my gosh, I didn't even name it.
Oh, you got to name it. We can come back to it if you got to think about it for a few.
Yeah, because I don't want something dumb like Dark City Voyage Home or Legacy or Dark City the Darker. I don't know.
Dusk City. Dark City 2. Dark Harder.
Well, that's it. There we go. You just made
there
it happen.
That's Dark City 2, Dark Harder. There we go. That is. They will fly off the shelves right there.
So I'm curious, since I'm so heavily influenced by obviously other things, and that wasn't very original, if there's anything you would change about my sequel that you think would make it better.
You know, the only, you know, I keep thinking about, if you were to make this into a series, you know, because I think the one thing that, and again, I apologize, listeners, if I'm tying The Matrix and The Dark City together. I mean, I really do view them as two separate movies, but it's interesting how one, you know, died prematurely, whereas one became a franchise just because it just waited, you know? Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is something to the idea of this world that was created by the others that I think it would almost be interesting to have them do it again, but maybe have them explore other sides of humanity. You know, like this movie, to me, Dark City focused on like you were saying, the humanity, the what makes us together, what makes us survive. And I wonder, it's like, what if the others focused on hatred?
Ooh.
You know, what if the others focused on what makes us kill our own society? And given the fact of what's kind of going on now in 2020 during a pandemic and all this stuff, and seeing like all the, you know, we're right now, whenever this airs, you know, we're recording this at a time when these COVID numbers are just skyrocketing again. And all because humanity doesn't want to listen and doesn't want to just relax. And, you know, perfect example, I'm a teacher and I, you know, I hear we need to have these sports games happen. And you know, well, we're going to shut down the schools, but we're not going to shut down sports. That's going to keep going. It's kind of like, why are we risking that?
Right.
You know, and I almost want the others to explore that dark side of humanity and almost do the opposite end. And I think actually through doing that, I actually think you would get some more action into the movie. So I think Dark City 2, Dark Harder, would actually have a little bit more action to it. I think it would actually have to have some... where you're actually fighting the others. Because now, if you're exploring their minds and exploring this darker element of the humanity, I think it would actually, like, in a weird way, infect them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of how it kind of did in the first movie. I think the violence would infect these creatures as well. Now, the question is, you said you would have Robert Shaw back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to. I almost want him to come back almost like, you know, the last third act, mm-hmm. where he pops in. You know, so we start off this movie with kind of somebody else and almost do like a Beneath the Planet of the Apes approach,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, John gets to come back and kind of save the day a little bit. Or even if he's just in that cameo, like John gets in like The Fly 2. You know, where,
yeah.
he kind of just is there to kind of explain a little bit as to how you can save the day. Because I can't watch another hour and a half of a mullet. I got to be flat out honest with you, CM. I can't do it.
You could have a hair and makeup could make some changes just
okay,
to the
you.
Mullet specifically.
Thank you.
Or... That's your biggest problem with my idea.
Yes, it is. It is. This is my biggest problem with this movie. Hair really bugs me in a movie.
Okay, so the first order of business is not to, you know, build this small group of people who all know what's going on and can make this decision about what their next steps are. It's to do some haircuts.
Yes, okay. Yes. The shared bondness of getting a haircut. And look, we all know if you let your hair grow during this pandemic and you went to go get your haircut, it was the best haircut you ever had. And don't lie to me and tell me it wasn't. It was a beautiful day.
That's true.
Of getting that haircut. It's actually funny. You know, we were talking on another episode, we were talking about Fright Night. If you ever watch the Fright Night movies.
Yeah.
And the first one, he's got a great haircut. The second one, he's got the wickedest mullet this side of Billy Ray Cyrus. I mean, it's like, I can't watch the movie. I got to put my thumb up to the screen so I can like cover the mullet a little bit. No offense to any of our listeners with mullets, but if you do like mullets, we have a great science fiction movie just for you.
Yeah.
I think your idea is actually kind of cool, and it takes it to a different level. I think, you know, we're almost like you've enjoyed the first one, but would you say yours? You have to watch the first one in order to watch this one.
I would, yeah, and mm-hmm. it intrigued me, the idea that depending on the resources of this alien species, I would think that they wouldn't just put all of their eggs in one basket. They would have to have multiple experiments going on with different variables, and they'd have to have a control group too. So there has to be more than one at the very, very least, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know, let's be honest, if they're exploring humanity, you know, in humans, they're going to be exploring other species.
Mm-hmm.
and I would actually, you know, actually that might be really kind of cool, where we actually bring in another human-like race that's out there that maybe is better than us.
This is becoming more and more Star Trek the more you talk.
it kind of is, actually. If, you know, all you got to do. All right, you know what? Fine. The others are going to battle Vulcans, okay? That's what it's. That's why. Or they've battled Romulans, which is why Tom Hardy looks like the others in Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh, I love
this.
There
we go. There we go. That's what happened. The others went into the Federation. They signed the contract. They're going to be a part of the meetings. And now they're in Star Trek. So now does Kirk come in? Does Picard come in?
Yeah.
Can we please get Janeway to come in?
This is the best conversation I've ever had in my life.
You heard it there, folks. That's what we do here at Vintage Cinema Repair. We give you what you want. but you know, it's also interesting too, because yeah, like I said, I would have to think if a studio was actually serious about doing this, they would actually have to kind of action it up a little bit. You know, and do you feel that would ruin it?
I do not. I think the first film not having that, it would be okay to introduce that into the second one, because you don't want to make something that is so similar to the first that's like, well, why even bother watching one or the other of these, or why bother making a sequel? So how do you set yourself apart in this sequel? Will you add, you stay true to the source material while adding something new, but like balancing that and doing that in a really graceful and classy way, I think is very, very difficult.
Yes, there's, I mean, yeah, and that's true. You know, it's actually, you know, a lot of people think it's easy to do a sequel, and the filmmaker in me would actually argue it is harder sometimes. And I will always say a perfect example for, you know, just a younger audience to think about is the difference between Stranger Things. Stranger Things season 2 versus season 1. You know, when they had when they were kind of on their own, you know, this is a weird idea. Nobody knows if it's going to work or not. Maybe it'll just disappear into the Netflix universe. But when it got so big, now they had to kind of build expectations for the audience. And, you know, you're going to get a lot of cooks into the kitchen. Yeah, and I would argue that sometimes sequels get ruined because of that exact element. There's so many cooks in the kitchen. You would definitely, if you were making Dark City 2 Dark Harder today, you would absolutely, I'm sorry, that's the title. I'm not going to veer from that. You would have to have, you would also automatically have that studio head coming in saying, no way. That first one was so, I had to sit through it. It was boring. You know, I didn't want to think while I was eating my popcorn on a Friday night. So we definitely need explosions.
I guess maybe, I'm curious what you think about this. I think maybe a good example, not necessarily the perfect example, but this happening correctly, probably, would be The Exorcist and its sequels. Because you have The Exorcist, which is more about not necessarily leading the audience, like with the score, for example. The music cues are not there to frighten you or tell you to feel frightened. They support and they enhance what's happening on screen. And what is happening on screen is a lot of space and room for everything to happen and for all the characters to be experiencing what they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And none of that is present in the second one, but it is a really cool story still. And you have these very interesting, sort of unique scenes and this banter, you know, between the detective and the priest. And so they did find an element to include that captures you while taking from the original story, but making something completely different.
Can I also say this is probably one of my favorite conversations ever, because you just defended The Exorcist II: The Heretic. I love that you defended that movie, because nobody defends Exorcist II: The Heretic. But no, I do agree with you. Like, you know, Cameron, James Cameron has this interesting concept that he always said, you know, when you're doing a sequel, you shouldn't have to have watched the first one in order to watch that movie. And I would argue that I think there are some sequels that do that, and there are some that don't. There are some sequels where you have to have watched the first one in order to get it. A couple of examples, though, of Cameron's approach, I think, is The Road Warrior. You know, you don't have to have watched Mad Max to understand Road Warrior. I would say you don't have to watch Terminator to really understand Terminator 2. Mm-hmm. From his example, but I would say you have to watch The Exorcist in order to understand The Exorcist 2. I think you have to watch French Connection to watch French Connection 2.
Yeah,
I don't know if Dark City, if you were given that the money to do that sequel, would the audience know about it well enough for them to let you kind of do just a direct sequel, saying no, watch the first one and then come back?
So that kind of makes me think of two things. Like, the first, I'm sorry, you're going to have to retract your praise of me, because I was thinking of the threequel. I was thinking Exorcist 3. I still like 2.
Oh, my God. Okay, but no, as long as you say you still defend it. But you know what? That's fine, too. I'm not going to retract it, because some people despise 3. But I know a lot of people that actually will defend Exorcist 3. In it, and I would say, if it's one of those things for me, if there wasn't an Exorcist 1, like if those movies, it's the classic Halloween 3, if it had just been called Season of the Witch, I think it would have found an audience. But because it was Halloween 3, audience is like, there's no Michael, I don't like it.
Halloween 3 is my favorite of the Halloween. Okay, maybe I have a thing for the third movies.
You do.
I guess I do. Well, and so I'm biased in another way, too, because I, as you were talking, it's like, you know what? I think I actually based my answer of whether or not you would have to watch the first one on my love of the first one and my desire to make other people watch it. So that's really not a clearly thought out and critical answer. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would want people to have to watch the first one. That response was more like, yes, of course, see the first one. It's amazing and beautiful, and you need to have that be a part of your life. So I kind of agree with you. I don't think you necessarily have to have that be in place.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. If you did it, then I don't think you really... I think you'd have to jettison John's character. I think it would have to be a brand new character dealing with the others and going through this new world. And that then, if you introduce John later, as, you know, like I said, as that kind of the wise man who knows all and can help this now for them to defeat this new world that they're battling up against. I think you'd have to do it that way almost.
I completely agree. You don't want to 80s mom him.
Please, please describe what that means. I need to know that right now.
By that, I just mean, so in my growing up, it was always the mom is dead tragically. We don't see the mom. Something happened. The mom is gone. And it's just, you know, the dad and the kids, or just the kids on their own. And it's always the mom.
Oh my gosh,
so
you're
to
right.
Bring, yeah,
you're
to bring right. him back, I think I would accept that. You can't 80s mom him, so you can't get rid of him completely. You can't, like, kill him off screen or pull a Fly 2, even though I do not fault the Fly 2 for that at all. That's okay. But, yeah, you got to bring him back.
I defend the Fly 2, so don't worry.
The Fly 2 is beautiful.
It is. I watched Fly 2 before I watched Fly 1, so I loved.
Oh. You know?
But you know what's funny, though? The Fly 2, though, is a perfect example, though, of what we're talking about, I think, with Dark City, that you would have, you know, the Fly 2 adds action and more, you know, it ups the ante a little bit with the horror, and it ups the ante with the violence. And it, because the first movie, really, there's not really a lot of horror in The Fly, other than it's the tragedy of what, you know, Jeff Goldblum's character goes through is, of course, but is horrific. And that very kind of that final scene, we finally get some horror elements to it. But The Fly 2 is just, you know, there's machine guns, and there's people's faces getting vomited and ripped off. And it's like they up the ante a little bit. And I think they would have had to do that for Dark City 2, Dark Harder.
Yeah.
So I absolutely agree with you that I think they would have to kind of just have a new character. Now, the funny part is, though, with this, though, is Dark City actually ended very much like, no, there's not going to be a sequel. You know, if you rewatch it, or do you not feel that way?
I think that John's act of turning the ship towards the stars so that they could have sunlight and kind of opening up that beach, I don't think that necessarily ends it. And I think that's kind of why I came to, you know, maybe they're trying to get back to Earth, and on the way there, they run into more cities, and it's just, you know, kind of, I guess I'm going a little bit Battlestar Galactica too.
Oh, frack you. Don't do that. Don't go.
No, 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 not. Path. I mean, geez. Influenced by it, not ruin the ending.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, when a movie does that, because nowadays, of course, everybody I think wants to leave it up for a sequel. I get why, as a director, sometimes you want to end it on a note to not have a sequel. And, you know, I would say there's some movies that shouldn't. I don't think there needed to be a Terms of Endearment 2, even though we got one with Evening News or Evening Star, sorry. But it's hard when movies do it. Like Highlander is the perfect example. They ended the Highlander with he won. You know, Highlander 1, like, that's it. And then it's like they wanted a sequel. Well, what do you do?
Yeah.
He was the last one of the immortals. He battled the Krug, and it's done. There is no more Highlander. And then we know there can only be 5,000. It can't just only be one. Go ahead.
Dark City did it right, I think. It's a little bit, there's a little bit of ambiguity there, which I always enjoy, because you can say, yes, it's ended, happy ending, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, new ending, but it's also open enough that you could easily continue the story. I think that's hard to do well.
Well, I think you stumbled upon it. The way to do it is the others are out there in other planets. They're in other galaxies. They're not just doing this here on Earth. They're doing it on, you know, Earth 2, Earth 5, you know, all they're doing it elsewhere with other creatures. And again, maybe, you know, one idea that I kind of thought of is, wouldn't it be interesting if they stumbled upon a planet that's all peaceful, but what they actually find within the peacefulness is the repression of the anger.
Yeah.
That these others have hidden it so well over the years that literally they've vulcanized it. You know, they've suppressed all their emotions, but inside is this thing, and all of a sudden, which is what I love about the movie. It's almost like what we're thinking is an infection. It's you know, what our thoughts of anger would actually infect the others, just like our thoughts of what we love and what our passions are affected the others in this, you know, in the first Dark City movie. I do think that's there's such an idea to that of them being somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a great, great theme. Cause you could, that's like a, each emotion could be its own sequel.
And that's where I think if they had gone with it, yeah, you definitely could do, the third movie would be humor. but what's interesting, what's the opposite of humor? You know, depression. It's, you know, the Dark City 3. What would be a great what's Dark City 3?
Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore. Dark City 3. D.
Well, you can't go to space because they're already in space.
They're already in space, so 4, it doesn't matter. Dark City 4, they're already in space, so you'd actually have to go to Earth.
Oh, you know, you could have just Dark City 4, we're already in space. That's the tagline.
We're our Dark City 4, we've already been here.
I'm not a good, I'm not good at this.
Well, this has been fun. This is great. I actually love this concept you've come up with, Dark City, because I was sitting there like, I don't know how you could do a franchise of Dark City at first. I'm like, it's kind of its own weird little thing. It's this little movie that I think cult fans find every once in a while, but you absolutely could turn this into a series and kind of take it away from it. So if you had a final thought about Dark City that you wanted, you know, our listeners to know about Dark City and your feelings about it and where you'd go with it, what is it?
Ooh, can I have a minute to think?
Absolutely.
Because my knee-jerk reaction was John's butt.
John's butt.
And I don't know how I feel about leaving it there.
Dark City 5. Man ass.
Man ass. John's butt, leave it there.
With the mullet.
I guess oh my gosh. Oh, wow, that just wiped away all coherent thought.
Like the others. See, you're right there. You're right there. All thought are gone. You just need Kiefer Sutherland to jack you with something.
I guess I would just, say to people, if you haven't seen this and you decide to watch it based on this conversation, it's not going to be as unique because you've seen it done, because you've probably seen The Matrix and other things after that that have taken similar inspiration or been directly inspired by it. And I would just encourage you to take your time watching it and remember when it took place and kind of think about its greater influence on the movie world.
Awesome. Awesome. CM, thank you so much for joining us here at Vintage Cinema Repair. Where can people find you again? Where can they reach out to you? And again, please plug Dairy Public Radio again. Where they can find that.
You guys can listen to us anywhere you listen to podcasts. We are all over the place. Just look for Dairy Public Radio. And of course, we're on social media as well. We're on YouTube. We try to be everywhere. And that's it. Yeah, we're on Patreon. We have a website, constantreaders.org. If you want to check that out, that's everything Stephen King and Stephen King adjacent. There are horror stories on there, poems, things that fans send us that we like to publish for them. And thank you so much for having me. This has been a fantastic and fun conversation.
Oh, CM, absolutely. And definitely please come back anytime you have a series to fix or a sequel to discover. Please come back here. So again, you can also, listeners, thanks so much. Tune in to us anytime on podcasts, you know, here on the Hollow Nine Network. But this is Professor Klink saying, save that 25 cents, be kind, and rewind. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody.
You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash ban from company headquarters. Code Gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. We didn't just decide out of the blue to extend our trip by 18 months. LV-324 is well outside the standard commercial shipping routes, even under expanded jurisdiction. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there already.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph.
The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a boat, just waiting for us to come along. And you want to bring one home for your friends in the weapons division. Merry fucking Christmas, right? Well, you go ask those badass mothers that came back from 324 with me about that. Right there, all of splattered all over the walls of the escape pod. Be my guest. See, you can keep trying to make this about negligence, about insubordination, about chain of command and regulations, but when you're done with all that bullshit, you're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.